We're here today to follow up on the press conference that we held here in February, where we vowed to make it our responsibility to take a leadership position on key areas impacting our sport, fighter health, and fighter safety. We also promised to deliver a comprehensive anti-doping policy that we believe positions our organization as a global leader in sport. After months of hard work and the addition of Jeff, we have taken the opportunity to not only launch an elite anti-doping policy, but also to invest, develop, and deploy a year-round athlete marketing and development program focusing on the preparation, performance, and education of our athletes. Yesterday, here at Red Rock, we finished a two-day athlete summit featuring nearly 50 emerging UFC athletes. At this summit, we offered press and social media training, as well as classes featuring experts in financial planning, nutrition, health, wellness. All of these offerings were designed to help these emerging UFC athletes so they can best position themselves for long-term success both in octagon. We are now also exploring services and companies that can help us place UFC athletes into careers post-fighting. Two of the athletes that participated in the Athlete Summit will be here later. They include number 6 ranked light heavyweight Sylvain St. Preux, as well as the Ultimate Fighter winner Michael Chiesa. Today, we'll further share details about that program and discuss the many initiatives being put in place and actions being taken to protect the health and safety of UFC athletes' integrity of sport. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to Lawrence Epstein, and I'm going to have him give you more details about our new athlete market.
Lorenzo, thanks a lot. Thanks for everybody for being here today. It's a big day for us, and I know a lot of you are here to hear about the new drug testing policy. Important to understand that's just one part of what we're putting together here for our UFC athletes and our new athlete marketing and development program. I want to run through a couple of the other partners that we are partnering with. The first company that we've done a deal with is a company called Fugenetics, and we're lucky enough here today to have Tyler Wallace, who's the Chief Product Officer from Fugenetics. Fugenetics is a really interesting company. It was born from a group that has a tremendous history and research with medical institutions around the United States, frankly around the world, involved in a lot of professional sports, including the NCAA and others. And the focus of Fugenetics is really trying to reduce injuries, optimize performance, enhance recovery after injuries take place. A central component of the Fugenetics program is very hopeful that all of our athletes will essentially have a functional assessment done by Fugenetics. That assessment will show them what their strengths are, and more importantly, it'll show them where their physical weaknesses are. Then a customized program will be designed for that athlete to enhance and fix those areas where there's weakness. And the goal, of course, is to reduce injuries and, as I mentioned, optimize performance. We're really excited about the partnership with Fugenetics. The second company that we are partnering with is a company called Exos. And there's a bit of an overlap with some of the stuff Exos does and that of Fugenetics, but Exos is really focused on performance and trying to put together sort of that full package so the athletes can perform at their highest levels. Everything from pre-workout stretching and warm-up to the innovative techniques that are used by Exos to increase performance, to cool down, to nutrition, to recovery. We had several of our people down at the Exos facility a few weeks back looking at some athletes, including Colin Kaepernick, Del Beckham. And then last week, we had some of our athletes down there, which included CM Punk, Rashad Evans, Luke Rockhold, and we also had our own Forrest Griffin down there running through the program, learning about the techniques that are being used at Exos. And the feedback we got from those athletes was incredible. The goal of Exos is, of course, to share all of these cutting-edge training techniques with all of our athletes, and not just the athletes, but with their teams. One of the things that Exos was very insistent upon is that athletes have the opportunity to bring their training staffs down to the Exos facility to learn from what they're doing. So we're really hopeful and excited about this new relationship with Exos. Third piece of this puzzle is something that we've been involved in for a fairly long period of time, 5 to 6 years now, That's our relationship with the Cleveland Clinic. The UFC, along with other promoters in the boxing business, have funded a study for the last 5 to 6 years. And that study is really focused on two things. Number one, identifying whether certain people, based upon their physiology, are predisposed towards brain injury. Simply, their brain sits in their head a certain way, and as a result, they're sort of more likely to get a brain injury. Secondarily, trying to identify early indications of brain injury. So before someone starts manifesting symptoms, you can identify an early indication of potential brain injury and then ultimately counsel that person out. Now, our goal is to, with respect to the Cleveland Clinic, is to have a situation like we currently have with eye exams for combat sports. So right now, if you have to undergo an eye exam in order to get a license, during that eye exam have a detection of a detached retina, you cannot get a license to participate in a combat sport. We'd like to have the same sort of scenario here with the brain, whereby if for some reason your physiology says you're predisposed towards brain injury or you're showing these early indications of brain or physical symptoms manifest themselves, that would be part of the licensing procedure, and you wouldn't be able to get a license. So we're excited about continuing that relationship with the Cleveland Clinic. We're bringing a lot of the stuff together with our athletes in our new campus that we're building here in Las Vegas. We're excited to build a new office building, which is important. But as part of that office facility, we're going to be building what we call tentatively the UFC lab. And that facility is going to be a state-of-the-art facility where all of our athletes can come and work out, use cutting-edge training techniques and, of course, equipment. But also, if there is an injury, come and rehab at our facility. I was lucky enough to go and visit some of the great sports facilities around the world. In particular, several months ago, got to visit the Man City campus in Manchester, England. And just to see, the facility that they built there and the incredible thought that went into that, we've taken a lot of the ideas that they actually put into place in their facility and are going to put that into ours. So we're really excited about that. The final piece of the puzzle is of course, I think what all of you are most interested in, and that is our new drug testing. And, the key, at least as we began this process, sort of the right person in place to lead that for us. And as Lorenzo mentioned, we're so excited to have Jeff Nowitzki with us. Jeff has a very unique set of circumstances, which I think brings him to us, and of course, I think makes him the best possible person we hire to fill this really important role. Jeff has worked for the government for 22 years, has a variety of experiences, performance-enhancing drugs. He's also a former college athlete, so he understands the athlete's mentality, and I think has really become a mentor, frankly, to a lot of the athletes that he interacted with over the years. The thing I want to emphasize before I announce who our drug test is that, the role that we've laid out here for Jeff is much more than simply being a guy who's going to be coordinating Fusionetics and the Exos and the campus and all the stuff we're talking about with the Cleveland Clinic. So I know it's the hot topic here today, and Jeff's going to talk a lot about that hot topic, but I want everyone to understand that his position is much bigger than that. So before I do hand this off to Jeff, I want to make the formal announcement that UFC has retained the United States Anti-Doping Agency, US USADA, as the independent administrator for our new drug testing policy. So with that, Jeff, let me hand it off to you.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. It's with great pride today that we officially announce the details of our new anti-doping policy. The creation of my position as Vice President of Athlete Health and Performance, as Lawrence alluded to, UFC has made a commitment to providing our athletes with the very best resources, tools to help them excel in their training and their rehabilitation while being an advocate for their long-term health and safety. Development of this new anti-doping policy is an important early step in our commitment and process. I'd like to read the first two sentences of our new anti-doping policy. May read as, this policy is a central part of UFC's expanded efforts to protect the health and safety of its athletes, and also to protect their right to compete on a level playing field. UFC's goal for this policy is to have the best anti-doping program in all of professional sport. Based upon Lawrence was alluding to, my exposure and experience in the anti-doping world and anti-doping programs throughout the world in professional sport, this policy meets that goal. This is the most comprehensive, effective, best in all of professional sport. Lawrence also stated a minute ago, we are proud to announce today that the United States Anti-Doping Agency will be independent administrator of our new policy. SADA is universally recognized as the premier anti-doping agency dedicated to preserving the integrity of competition, protecting athletes who play fair, and compete clean. The coming weeks and months, myself, other UFC representatives, and USADA will embark on an education blitz. Provide our athletes with multiple levels of education on the details of this new policy. Our education will include in-person presentations, hands-on demonstrations of online and mobile applications they'll be using, written material, and they'll be receiving online education courses. This program will consist of unannounced, year-round, in- and out-of-competition testing, collections of both blood and urine, with the possibility of a collection occurring any place, anytime, with no notice. Policy is modeled on the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA code, and is consistent with code's definition of prohibited substances and techniques, as well as collection procedures and the WADA-accredited laboratory. Part of our putting this policy together, we went to Montreal and met with representatives of WADA. Sanctions under this policy a strong deterrent effect against the use of performance-enhancing drugs. First-time offense for the use of non-specified substances such as anabolic steroids, growth hormones and peptides, blood doping drugs and products will be punishable with up to a 2-year suspension, the possibility of an additional 2 years where aggravating circumstances exist. Results in a possible 4-year suspension for a first-time offense. Second offense will double that penalty up to 8 years, and the third offense could result in a punishment up to a lifetime ban. First offense for the use of specified substance, WADA code is marijuana, cocaine, other stimulants, and corticosteroids, will be tested for in competition only, consistent with the WADA code. That will be punishable with up to a 1-year suspension with the possibility of an additional 2 years where aggravating circumstances exist. Policy definition of in competition will be 6 hours before the weigh-in, 6 hours after the fight. Sanction in this area can double on each of the second and third offense. Policy will also include financial deterrence, with the violation occurring during or leading up to a bout, resulting in the disqualification of the result of that bout, forfeiture of a title, forfeiture of ranking, and any purse or compensation related to that bout. We have designated specifically in our policy that any purse or compensation forfeited will be put toward the cost of UFC's anti-doping program or towards anti-doping research. Look forward to working with the various state athletic commissions where we hold events, be open and transparent with those commissions, laws and rules of those commissions. I truly believe in fairness, and policy reflects that. There will be process afforded to our athletes and fighters. The implementation of this policy, collecting, handling of the samples, their rights to an appeal, and arbitration. Our athletes will be treated fairly, evenly, and with due process under this policy. Our policy will be publicly available prior to our implementation of the policy, which will occur as promised on July 1st. That being said, it's my pleasure now to introduce two representatives from the independent administrator of UFC's anti-doping policy, United States Anti-Doping Agency. First, as a track and field athlete that competed in the 1980s like I was, there was no bigger or better role model in that sport, or for any sport in my opinion, WADA's current chairman of the board, Edwin Moses. Edwin's Olympic gold medals in the 400-meter hurdles in 1976 and 1984, and his 122-race consecutive winning streak, 1977 and 1987, are the epitome of an athlete with once-in-a-lifetime natural athletic ability in there. Second, Chief Operating Officer of USADA for the last 10 years, Travis Tigart, has molded and led this organization that, again, is universally recognized as the premier dedicated to protecting athletes who play and compete fair from those who don't. I'd like to welcome to the stage Edwin Moses, USADA's Chairman of the Board, Travis Tigart, USADA's Chief Executive Officer.
Historic event as UFC becomes the first professional sport in the United States to have an externalized, independent testing modeled after the key elements of the WADA anti-doping program. As an Olympian who competed during a time when Team USA didn't have an effective anti-doping program and was looked to as a dirty country, I have been a longtime supporter of implementing independent and transparent anti-doping programs in sport around the world. Those of you who may be less familiar with the work that we do at the United States Anti-Doping Agency, USADA is recognized by Congress as the independent anti-doping organization for Olympic, Paralympic, and Pan-American sport in the United States. USADA was founded in 2000 after Olympic athletes pushed to have an independent program put in place to protect their rights. Our mission is to preserve the integrity of competition, but perhaps more importantly, to protect the rights of clean athletes. We do this by providing education, developing cutting-edge science, implementing a robust testing program, conducting investigative efforts, and holding accountable those who would use dangerous performance-enhancing drugs to cheat their competitors. Much like the clean athletes in the Olympic movement in the 1980s and 90s, it is the clean athletes in UFC who have asked for USADA to implement this anti-doping program. And we take our responsibility to them very seriously. UFC, like the United States Olympic Committee in the late 90s, have taken the brave and important step to externalize their anti-doping programs to USADA. And because of the leadership shown by the UFC, these athletes will now have the anti-doping program they deserve. These athletes will be able to say with confidence that they'll be testing under a world-class anti-doping program and that their competitive results will truly speak for themselves. Speaking on behalf of the entire USADA Board of Directors, I can tell you that a substantial amount of thoughtful consideration and time has been put into the discussion on how to implement a program that provides the strongest protection for clean athletes. We look forward to working with all of the stakeholders in UFC to achieve what we are all working towards, which is a level playing field where athletes can compete and win clean and where their rights are protected. Thank you. Having said that, I'll turn it over to my executive director, Travis Tigart, to give you more details on the program.
Just a brief statement for me, and I think we're going to open up to question and answer. Listen, I think it's a brand new and bright day for the athletes of the UFC. And this new program, that's a new standard for all professional sport. And we're absolutely thrilled to partner with UFC in running this program with the dedication that they've demonstrated through their action, the development of this policy, and being willing to turn over and essentially abdicate their authority to us, the independent national anti-doping organization, to handle implementation of a robust, effective, transparent policy. So we're thrilled to be here, and I think it's a great new day for all athletes in the UFC and pro athletes around the world by this example.
So I think with that, we're going to take some questions.
Mike Martinez for UFC.com. Dr. Moses, can you tell me how this program compares to drug testing in other major sports, specifically the NFL and Major League Baseball? Is this tougher or is it comparable?
I think the most important aspect of it is the independence, that there is an independent body that does all the objective measurement that educates the athletes. And we stand between the athletes and the federation and take that responsibility. I think Robert can probably give you more insight into that on the day-to-day.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, given the independence, the transparency, the robustness, the policy that's going to be implemented, it's the top of all professional sport around the world.
Kevin Ioli with Yahoo Sports. I don't know if this is for Lawrence or Jeff, but a couple questions. First of all, what about past failures? Are they going to be kind of, when we're talking about the sanctions, so if somebody has a past failure, is this sanction disability?
Yeah, the possibility exists either of that counting as a previous penalty or sanction under our policy, so it could be the second offense, or potentially going toward the aggravated circumstances enhancement to an offense. It'll depend on the due process afforded the athlete in that potential, you know, previous positive, whether or not accredited laboratories were used, those types of things. But that'll be handled in the administration of the policy by USADA.
Is the UFC now a signatory then to the WADA code?
We are not technically a signatory. The only differences between our policy and the WADA code would be the difference in the first-term sanctions without the aggravating circumstances, so a 2 versus a 4 year, and then the ability for an athlete to appeal toward the court of arbitration for sports. Our policy does have an appellate and arbitration provision written into it, but it's not with the court of arbitration for sports.
And then I want to ask Dana a question directly, because it would affect you in terms of putting together fights. If, you know, there's the possibility that you could lose fights on relatively short notice. How do you deal with that when, you know, you're, especially given how many cards you have, and, you know, if you lose a high-profile fight off a card, you know, you may not have a main event. We had that at UFC 151. How do you deal with that going forward?
We had that happening last year before this drug policy was in place. We said last time we came here and had this press conference that we were going to implement a serious anti-doping policy, and here it is. And, you know, I'm hoping, I'm praying that you know, it's obviously a very positive thing, but I hope that our guys aren't using drugs. I hope that's the case, but we'll see. We'll see how this thing plays out. Obviously, if guys get busted for taking some type of performance-enhancing drug before a fight, we're gonna have to figure it out.
And then follow up, what is the state's role in this? Because you're announcing penalties, but the state has no jurisdiction too. So if I take, you know, some kind of anabolic steroids and I'm going to fight, my subject is penalty, and by the Nevada Athletic Commissioner, how does that work?
Well, a lot of this stuff still needs to be worked out. But first thing is that we're going to be working with athletic commissions starting here in the state of Nevada, around the United States, and around the world, and with federations also, to try to, first of all, explain to them what our program looks like. Our hope is that, and I think we're very confident this will happen, that athletic commissions will begin to use the data and the information regarding the athletes that are participating in their particular jurisdiction to make decisions about licensing. So, for example, in Nevada, when an athlete comes here, the Nevada Athletic Commission will now have, you know, hopefully a year or 18 months or however long that athlete's been part of the UFC, a history of drug testing, a medical passport, for lack of a better term, that they will then be able to utilize to make decisions. There is going to be some crossover between, you know, drug tests that are done as part of our program and decisions that are made by athletic commissions, but, you know, we think we'll work that stuff out. I mean, the other thing I think that is important to us is that ultimately we have athletic commissions formally recognize and adopt the decisions that are made by USADA with respect to any of the positive drug tests as part of this program. So, for example, if an athlete tests positive in a random drug test, we'd want the Nevada Athletic Commission and commissions around the world, federations around the world, formally recognize and adopt those decisions.
Then just, Travis, a couple questions for you, if I could. On the like this, first of all, the whole ridiculous negotiations went on between Mayweather and Pacquiao in order to get their fight, when guys could be blood tested, when they couldn't be, and all that. Are we away from that era now? So in other words, if you decide to blood test me today or you know whenever you want, you have the full authority to do that. There's no time limit cut off.
Yeah, and when I said earlier independence, UFC literally has removed themselves from the material operations of the policy. And so questions about who's tested, when they're tested, what they're tested for, the year-round testing program, in and out of competition, blood, urine, athlete biological passport, what's tested for TIR analysis, EPO analysis, human growth hormone analysis, GHRP analysis. Those are all decisions that are with us, the National Independent Anti-Doping Organization, with no involvement or decision-making authority from the UFC. So when you've heard in the past, sort of the fox guarding the hen house, can't promote and police your sport, they've recognized that, and they've put steps in action behind the reality that the only way to truly effectively do this is by outsourcing and externalizing and truly making independent all of those key functions. So absolutely in line with the WADA code, we have the ability to do year-round, as Jeff said, year-round, 365-day-a-year blood, urine, testing on athletes, whether they're licensed, as long as they fall under the rules of the policy, and those athlete support personnel as well who are involved with this sport are going to be held to the same anti-doping rule violations of trafficking, possession, distribution, and administration that we see that the WADA code covers for all Olympic athletes around the world.
And just one final subject that I think it'll cover two questions. First to you, Jeff. Obviously, weight cutting has become an issue, and I know California is, you know, is trying to do a study. And at the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, Mayweather got an infusion after the weigh-in. He applied for a TUE, which seems to me it wasn't very transparent, given the fact that he got the TUE at the weigh-in and wasn't announced to the public until after. How could there be a notice to the opponent? So are infusions going to be an issue? And as part of your initiative with all these other organizations, are you going to work on, you know, weight cutting issues?
Well, written into our policy, our TUE application process, and that's therapeutic use exemption, will be handled by USADA. They will have a TUE board in place to determine if there's a medical necessity and if the drug would potentially provide athletic performance enhancing benefit. So they will administer that side of the program.
Have, like with Exos or any of the other ones, is there a weight-cutting element to that?
I think part of, you know, handing off this program to USADA, to being the administrator of the program, allows me to focus, as I talked about earlier, on other long-term health and safety aspects for our fighters. So that's definitely something that we'll be looking at, and definitely, you know, in terms of weight-cutting and specific drugs, there are prohibited drugs that can be used in the assistance of weight-cutting, and those are on our list of things that USADA will test for.
And I just, can you clarify, like in a situation like Mayweather had, where if you're saying there's transparency, if he appeals for a TUE the day of the weigh-in, it doesn't seem like it's a really transparent thing, right? The, you know, how, the notice of the opponent wouldn't even know until, I guess in this case, it was after the weigh-in. Pacquiao didn't know.
So
in a situation like this, can I apply at the weigh-in?
So saline infusions, I think, is your question, and they're in certain circumstances prohibited under the WADA code. They're not prohibited, for example, in some of the state regulatory bodies, like here in Nevada. It's not an offense. You're allowed to do that for any purpose. They're only prohibited for very narrow reasons within the Olympic world. And if you want to use one, you have to, and it's under a potentially prohibited circumstance, you have to apply for a TUE. We've had a number of those applied for. The transparency is, look, we were, when the process was finalized, you know, within an hour of receiving the permission and the grant of that, it was notified to all authorities and the athletes themselves. So we absolutely will be, you know, continuing to provide information, you know, particularly under this program where the rules expressly say that if TUEs are applied for, that they'll be shared immediately with the UFC, but also with if there's a commission that's licensing an athlete for a particular fight, They'll also be shared with them. Let me make one more point about the TUEs, because I know those can be an issue here sometimes within this sport community. You know, the starting point is zero drug. Let's make no mistake about that. And I know sometimes in this community we confuse someone seeking testosterone or a therapeutic use exemption. Let me say one thing about PRT for people seeking use of testosterone. There's no legitimate reason for an otherwise healthy and fit person that's 22 to 32 years old to be seeking a TUE for testosterone. It's not erectile dysfunction. It's not they're tired. It's not any of trying to have kids. In fact, testosterone is birth control in some countries. So these excuses that you've heard for athletes sometimes in fighting sports looking for use of testosterone will not fly under this program. That said, someone has, let's say, a diabetic since they were a young kid, and they need insulin, which is an otherwise prohibited substance. They have asthma, which is an otherwise prohibited substance. They'll have to apply for and receive, if they can use it and still compete, and it has to be based on a need. It has to provide no performance advantage, and they have to document that there's no other alternative medication that potentially could provide a solution to that medical illness. And then independent experts, even outside of USADA, but medical experts that we have within our pool will evaluate those medical documents and then make a determination of whether that's appropriate within the sport confines and under the rules that apply. And if it is and they're granted, they're immediately provided notification of that, as is the state commission if they're licensed in a particular state or country, since we're talking about a global program. And at the end of the day, if that's denied, they will have an appeal right to the independent arbitrator system. Totally open, totally transparent, totally fair to allow athletes who have legitimate medical needs that is not going to give them any performance enhancing benefit to apply and potentially receive those.
Kevin, just to clarify, it's specifically written into our program on the TUE process. If USADA, through their TUE board, were to determine that there was a need, a medical need for the use of a drug, before that fighter would be told they had the go-ahead, they would first need to go to that athletic commission. For example, if the fighter was fighting in Nevada, despite, you know, USADA board's approval, a combination of USADA, the fighter, and myself, or maybe all three, would need to go to the Nevada State Athletic Commission and get the clearance from them first, specifically written in the policy.
Can you tell me how soon you will begin testing athletes? The program gets underway. And U.S. athletes subject to more testing than fighters around the world?
I'll just take the first part of that. This policy will roll out July 1st, and all fighters under contract with the UFC at that time will be subject to testing under the policy.
And obviously, just to follow up on that as well, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. Education is critically important, so they know the policies. So over the next, you know, several weeks and months, we'll be implementing both the education aspects and the testing aspects of the program. No, this is a global program. There's a minimum number of tests, 2,750. We can go up from there. And in addition to the number of tests, I think what's really important is the type of test. So CIR, EPO, all the ones that we've talked a little bit about here this morning already, all those will be available and utilized where appropriate. And that averages out, if you want to run the numbers, on the 550 so athletes within the sport of UFC, about 5.5, I think, tests per athlete. That doesn't mean each one's going to get 5.5 because the testing is done on a strategic basis, particularly as we get test results and review those test results. We talked a little bit about the athlete biological passport. We have a whistleblower line. If we get information, again, that's information that comes to the independent organization. We'll be executing tests similar to our Olympic program on a targeted basis. And we'll be using, you know, all the elements contained in the WADA international standards of how you execute the most effective testing plan to reach maximum deterrence. Right? We don't want to catch anyone. But if they're cheating, they're going to get caught. We hope this program, similar to what we saw in the Olympics, when it was put in place by an independent organization, deterred athletes and made the costs so high that they decided not to be tempted. And let's be real, the win at all costs in every sport, youth sports all the way up to elite professional sport, is huge. And the pressures on athletes to use these drugs to gain a game-changing advantage is enormous. We're not being realistic if we don't think they're going to make those decisions, whatever sport they're in. And we've seen it with a 14, 15-year-old inline roller skater whose dad, coach, and trainer had him on a pretty sophisticated drug program just so he could win, so the dad could walk around corporate America bragging about his son being one of the top junior world champion inline roller skaters. Not a fame sport, not a money sport. But let's not underestimate the pressures that are on these athletes who want to win. But we're here to take that pressure off and to ensure if they decide to make the mistake to cheat, that they're going to pay a heavy penalty. So we hope they don't.
Evelyn Rodriguez from Global.com in Brazil. I know you said that the program is going to be global. I was just curious about like how you guys are going to pass the athletes outside the country. Are you guys going to leave the country to pass them there? Are you guys going to work with other labs? And how are you guys going to handle the out-of-competition tests, like in Brazil, for example?
Yeah, thanks for that question. It may have come earlier and I didn't answer it fully. We've got a network of other national anti-doping organizations. So in Brazil, ABCD, which is the independent national anti-doping agency in Brazil, will be coordinating with. Up in Canada, CCES, the Canadian Center for Ethics and Sport. Over in Japan, JADA, the Japanese anti-doping agency. Throughout Europe, UKAD, United States, being a United Kingdom anti-doping agency. All these are similarly situated in that they're recognized by their home countries as being the independent organization whose sole mission is not to promote sport, but whose sole mission is to protect the rights of clean athletes and the integrity of sport. So the plan is, and obviously this is where the capacity building, you know, starts from, you know, from this time forward, is having coordination with those organizations and ensuring that the athletes, whether they're U.S. athletes traveling those countries to train and live or compete, or those athletes coming here, that they're covered year-round all the time, no matter where they are. There is a whereabouts function to this program, very similar to the WADA code program, because you can't do out-of-competition testing if you don't know where the athletes are. And so the athletes will have an obligation to provide us their whereabouts and are subject then to testing literally 365 days a year on any given year, whether they're licensed to fight a particular bout or it's the off-season. No. And on the lab question, best labs are being utilized. WADA, anti-doping agency certified and accredited laboratories. There's roughly 33 of those around the country. The idea is to use the most, you know, from a cost standpoint, the most efficient resources to get samples to the labs in that area that are closest. So in Brazil, their lab is coming back online. I think just received its reaccreditation from the World Anti-Doping Agency a couple of weeks ago at the WADA Foundation board meeting. And so absolutely that lab, who's going to hopefully also test the Olympic Games in Rio in 2016, will be utilized to run any samples taken down in Brazil. The WADA accredited lab in Japan, for example, will be, you know, utilized. Australia, throughout Europe. That's the idea from an efficiency standpoint, ensuring, you know, top science, athletes' rights are protected in that sense, but as efficient as we possibly can to get the results as quick as we can and let the process work.
NBC Las Vegas for Lorenzo and Dana. Lorenzo, at the last press conference, said, see this problem getting worse, or better, so that way.
Well, that's certainly a possibility. I mean, obviously, I said that at the last press conference, just trying to note that, look, we were jumping up into this issue in a very aggressive manner, and there is the potential that very high-profile fighters, some, you know, any fighter on a roster now has the potential they could be caught. There could be major fights that fall out, and we are prepared to deal with that. That's just a consequence that hopefully it won't happen, but if it does, we understand that. But I think that, you know, at the end of the day, the way this program was structured and the education process and the way it's going to be rolled out, we're hopeful that there is a strong enough deterrent aspect of what we are doing here that it is very clear to every athlete on the UFC roster, and even an athlete that potentially believes that they will be on the UFC roster in the future knows that they cannot use any prohibited substance. And that's the bottom line. It's just there's over. You can't use anything. If you use it, you will get caught and will be.
Well, like I said to Kevin, I'm trying to be a little more optimistic. But yeah, I mean, this is a serious policy, and these guys are going to get tested, and if you're using drugs, you're going to get caught. I'm hoping that's not the case. But if it is, you know, we are, the facility that Lawrence said that we're building this facility because there were so many injuries last year. So many injuries last year that a lot of main, co-main events fell out. So we're being proactive now and trying to fix things that seem like they're impossible to fix. We're trying to educate the athletes on how to train better, how to warm up, how to stretch, how to do all these things, and we're trying to fix something that seems unfixable. Obviously, we had a couple of drug issues this year, and now we jumped right on this, and we're trying to fix this too. You know, we love this sport, we love the athletes, and we're trying to do what we can to fix things that seem like they can't be fixed. So we'll see how this thing plays out with trying to prevent injuries and trying to prevent guys from using performance-enhancing drugs.
Yes, that's correct. We are funding this entire program.
And so, from what I've understood, that in the past helped pay for drugs, athletics, that pulling money.
No, we're committed to funding this program. As I said, we're going to continue to work with the various state athletic commissions, and on what their needs are, we will address the issues as they come to us. I mean, the understanding that we had with various, or at least with Nevada, is that when they decided to do a test, you know, they would come to us, tell us, and we would agree to pay for it. We're not necessarily going to change that, but we're hopeful that the fact that this is such a broad testing program, all-encompassing, that they'll recognize what SADA is bringing to the table, the value of the history of the athlete, their biological passport. Or maybe they'll be comfortable with that. If we don't know, we'll have to sit down and talk to them.
Dana, I don't know how many fighters you have under contract, but obviously you're dealing with many athletes from different cultures, different backgrounds, different countries. How do you convince them, or explain to them, that this anti-doping program is a good thing and it's a benefit all of them, that there aren't bad guys lurking around the corner waiting to get them to get into a cup and catch them at doing something? Because I know there are a lot of pro athletes that have that feeling, that that's what this is all about.
Right. It doesn't matter where you come from, what culture, what language you speak. You know cheating is cheating. If you're using performance-enhancing drugs or things that will give you an advantage, you're a cheater in any language or any culture. And, this isn't about going out and sneaking up on the athletes. It's about cleaning up the sport. It's about if you take a good fighter, take a really good fighter, a guy who's super talented at a young age, and you start using performance-enhancing drugs, it destroys you. Destroys you physically, mentally, emotionally, every way that a really good athlete can be destroyed. That's what performance-enhancing drugs do to you, and that's what we're trying to prevent. We're trying to create a clean sport where everybody's on a fair playing field. And I say this all the time. I really personally don't care if a guy can hit a ball over a wall further, if he's using performance-enhancing drugs. It means nothing to me. I don't care. But when two guys go in and there's physical contact and another guy is on drugs and one guy isn't, that's a big deal. You can seriously injure somebody. You can kill somebody. Big difference. A lot different than baseball and some of these other sports. Football and fighting are a contact sport.
That's about the other two programs. The other one is... know that these fighters have their specific training regimen, whether it's fighting, whether they're training for a bout or not. How do you get them on board saying we have something here that's going to help you when they may have a coach or they themselves may feel like, hey, I got something going. I don't need any additional help. Why is the UFC trying to get me to go to Las Vegas, their
right.
training facility, meet their guys? I don't need it.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying. The 50 athletes that were here for the summit were very receptive to it. And I'm sure you guys have heard me say recently about the way that some of these guys are training. You shouldn't be sparring every day trying to, you know, trying to hurt each other in training when you have a big fight coming up. And the reception has been very well received from the coaches too. As we go on here in life, there's science, there's sports, there's things, there's new things that are being tested and better ways to train. And fighting has very much been in the Stone Age for a long time. And this sport, I said it before, you know, when you first started out training, there were like three places to go train. That's how all the talent ended up at one place. We have to evolve. The sport has to evolve. Training has to evolve. Nutrition and all the other things. We're just providing a resource here for the athletes. And it's for the coaches, too. This isn't something like we're saying, hey, your gym's doing it all wrong. This is the right way to do it. We're trying to educate everybody, the athletes and the trainers. And you know, it's been received pretty well so far. We're not trying to pull guys out of their gyms or you know, say that their trainers aren't training them the proper way. We're trying to educate everybody.
Jeremy Botter, Bleacher Report. Question for Dana Lorenzo. Was there a specific failure or incident that made you guys go, it's time? Was it Anderson, the one with Anderson and Hector Lombard, something along those lines?
We kind of covered it when we were here last February. You know, the whole idea of implementing a third-party anti-doping policy is something we've been working on for at least the last couple years. Now, as we started to dig into this, there was, you know, obviously as you start to look at some of the legal aspects of it, you start to sit in a boardroom and you have these academic debates on can you do this, can you not do that. And quite honestly, you know, we were in the process of pulling this together. We were already in discussions with, you know, USADA and other organizations about putting something together. And yes, there were some very high-profile cases in July and February where we just finally said, you know what, we're just going to do this, and we're going to figure it out, we're going to make it happen by July. Made that commitment.
And like you said, we were already funding a lot of the drug tests with the Athletic Commission. We were either going to spend a ton of money with the Athletic Commission and let them go out and do it, or find a way that made sense for everybody. So it's not like there were a couple of high profile cases that happened, and we've been all over this thing since the beginning. We just finally figured it out.
And let me point out, we've had a great working relationship with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. They've been at the forefront. They've really done an incredible job taking on drug testing and making sure that there is a clean sport. But the fact of the matter is, out of the 41 or 42 fights we'll do each year, we'll maybe do 5 or 6 here. We'll do fights in various other states around the United States, provinces, and Canada. And there's no real standard as far as when they test, how they test, what lab it's tested at, and then you multiply that into different countries. So we just felt like in order to progress the sport forward, that we needed a global solution. And at the end of the day, through the due diligence that we did, and then after Jeff came on board and the diligence that he did, we made the determination that USADA was really, in our opinion, the best capable of providing that service for our athletes.
Is there any concern on y'all's part of subjecting, I mean, I don't know the law, but subjecting independent contractors to testing year-round? I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of anything quite like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think there's a concern about it from a legal standpoint. I mean, this is just part of the condition of being a UFC athlete. You've got to submit yourself to, a 365-day per year drug testing protocol. And that's just part of one of the requirements of participating in events with us. As you know, most of our athletes fight 3 times a year. And right now, they're fairly accustomed to being tested just around those particular events. This is going to be a new system, but if you want to be a UFC fighter, this is something you've got to do.
One final question for Travis. What happens if a fighter tells you he's going to be here and then he's not there when you go to test him? Is that the same thing as a failed test?
Yeah, so under the WADA standard whereabouts program, there's 3 strikes of that nature, either not filing your information, not being available where you tell us you're going to be because you didn't update properly. 3 strikes within a 12-month period can then result in a sanction up to a year. And it's actually 2 years under the policy, up to.
Take our first question over the phones from Dave Dibert, Post Media News. Thanks, you guys. Just a couple that that haven't been asked, or perhaps just want to clarify. Going forward, how much do you rely on athletic commissions at this point, as far as testing?
I'll go ahead and answer that one. I think the answer is we're going to work with athletic commissions and figure out what they want as far as drug testing for their particular events. As I mentioned previously, as we fast forward a year or two down the road, we're going to be able to deliver to athletic commissions this, you know, athlete biological passport that the commissions will then be able to use in making licensing decisions for particular athletes. So as time goes on, we're very hopeful that athletic commissions and federations around the world will use the information that has been developed with respect to the athletes that are participating in their particular jurisdiction. If the athletic commissions say, you know, we want to do additional drug testing for this particular event, we're going to have to do that drug testing. But we're very hopeful that we're actually going to be providing a much clearer, much more complete picture to those commissions and federations, so they'll be able to make, frankly, much more informed decisions.
Okay. And what qualifies? You touched on this very briefly. I think Jeff did. What qualifies as aggravating circumstances?
I don't have the definition exactly here in front of me. Do you have the policy? I'll read it to you if I could.
Okay. Thank you.
It's essentially modeled after the last version of the WADA code, which had an aggravating set of circumstances defined in it, and it was, you know, multiple things such as, you know, egregious intent, conspiracy, so agreements with others to attempt to defeat the testing system, multiple administrations over a period of time, multiple substances, arguably, potentially over a period of time, would all be considered, again, by, you know, by us and the facts around that particular case and decision made on what the appropriate aggravation, if any, ultimately would be.
All right, thank you. Lorenzo, last one. Roughly, do you have any kind of estimate on how much this will cost annually?
I'll say that, you know, obviously it's a substantial commitment on our part, upwards into the multiples of millions of dollars for us to be able to implement this on a global basis.
All right, thanks, guys.
Next, we'll go to Daniel Flynn with Breitbart Sports.
Two questions. First question for Edwin Moses. Can you give us an idea of what it's like to be a clean athlete competing against athletes that you know are dirty, and what was going through your mind in the 80s when that was happening? And second, does the fact that cheaters can physically permanently hurt the clean fighters in mixed martial arts make you, you know, a little bit more enthusiastic about entering into this partnership with the UFC?
I will say that UFC has really covered the bases on what it takes to continue to win if you want to remain clean, and that's the playing field that everyone here wants to have. The discussions and explanation of Fusionetics, Exos, and the Cleveland Clinic and the UFC lab, those are what we call alternative training methods. And to get out in front and introduce these methodologies, ways in which athletes can compete clean, can compete smarter, and have people that help them and show them the way, that really makes a difference. In my day, I had to work out 2-3 times a day, and it hurt, and I had to eat a lot of food and drink a lot of water in order to do it, but that's what I was willing to do. Some of the things that I did when I was running, which are quite routine now, like ice baths, PNF stretching, plyometrics, things of that nature, where very few people were doing them, but I was, and I found people who knew how to train athletes in that area. So all these things are a part of it. And I think the most important part of the program, when you talk about drug testing, generally, most of the time people think in punitive terms about athletes testing positive, having an adjudication, getting sanctioned. One of the biggest parts of any drug testing program is education. And that is going to be tantamount and very important for the athletes. But more so than that, the athletes have to realize that they have a responsibility to understand what the education is about, understand what substances they can use, what substances are prohibited, and under what circumstances. And even going further than that, they will have to make sure that their entourage, their trainers, consultants, coaches, and even medical doctors are aware of what the rules are, because there's been many cases where doctors have given substances to athletes not knowing that they would be on a list. So education is going to be one of the most important aspects of it, one of the aspects of drug testing programs that many times gets left behind in the process. But it's probably the number one offensive weapon here. It's already started this weekend, and UFC has done a great job and has great plans in order to educate the athletes. But that's going to be incumbent upon the athletes to really figure out what's going on. And of course, with our help at USADA, we have some fantastic tools online, modules and apps that you can use to determine and send in your whereabouts. So those things have been thought of, but education is one of the most important tools for everyone, for us at USADA, for UFC. It's a process of learning and understanding and getting out in front of the wave to make this whole program work.
So question for the folks from the UFC. One of the points that Roger Goodell was asked about last year was whether he gets tested, because, of course, the players get punished for violating a test. Will Lawrence and Dana and Joe Logan and anyone else who's not a fighter in the UFC, are they going to be tested for the same recreational drugs that the fighters are tested for?
You can test me for those, yeah. That's good. I mean,
yeah, you can test me too. I like to drink, but other than that, I'm not.
That's
good.
Positive for whiskey for sure.
Thank you, guys.
And next we'll go to Damon Martin with Fox Sports.
Yeah, just a couple quick follow-ups. I think it was Kevin that asked earlier, when you're working with the athletic commissions, for instance, Nevada that just passed their new policy where they said a first-time steroid offense would be 3 years, again, is that just going to be in coordination with you guys, or will your suspension kind of go on top of that? Or I just kind of want further explanation of that, especially with the new policies Nevada is about to enact in September.
This is Travis from USADA. I think it's not enacted yet, so we'll see if it does. Obviously, a good step to strengthen the penalties around hardcore doping substances. I think at the end of the day, we're going to do our best to not only coordinate, as was previously indicated by Lawrence, on the testing, but also on any recognition of sanctions that may arise. And in an ideal world, there's no dispute. We're on the same team. They want clean sport. They want the health and safety of the athletes to be protected. They want the integrity of the competition, particularly with the gaming aspect, to be protected, and that's what we want. So hopefully we're going to come to, you know, total agreement on what those sanctions are. If there's an episode where, or a particular example where, you know, they give a sanction that's higher, let's say, under a new policy that they may put in place, or arguably lower, then that's something that, if it's lower, I think the UFC's policy is going to remain, and if there's a higher one out of the UFC process, that's what will remain. If the one from the commission is higher, that's what's going to be recognized. And the rules are very specific about recognizing, as long as there's a fair process, recognizing any sanction coming out of a state athletic commission, and those final adjudications are immediately recognizable under the UFC anti-doping policy.
And then with the UFC sanctions, for instance, in an area, let's say when you have a fight card in, you know, China, or an area that doesn't necessarily have an athletic commission, you know, England, I assume, you know, Scotland, things like that, does a fighter's contract just basically go into a suspended state when they're dealing with a suspension being sanctioned down by the UFC? Is it, you know, still just like now where it's called for release? If that's the case, if you choose to just terminate the athlete, is that all kind of part of the encompass of this policy?
Yeah, this is Jeff Nowitzki. The policy reads, if there is a positive test in a non-commissioned location, then the policy will, the sanction will still be set forth, and under UFC rules and policy, that fighter will not fight again for the UFC under the terms of the sanction.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
And that completes our questions for today.
So there, you know, the state athletic commissions don't have a right to arbitration. Some people take the court, and there have been cases on court. So when that conflicts, what happens there? You know, if I'm tested in Nevada and I get a penalty and I want to test Nevada's penalty, I can test Nevada for federal court, whatever. In your case, there's arbitration. So how would that affect each other, given that I may not have arbitration rights in a given state?
Yeah, I think if... obviously, there's some of those issues got to be worked through, but I think ultimately they will have notice of any potential violation on an A sample, as well as if a non-analytical case is brought based on documents, not a positive test, following investigations that we will perform. They will have that information when it's noticed to the athlete and to the UFC. If their process happens and they make a ruling, that's going to apply. We'll still have the ongoing arbitration process if it's delayed. The ideal, obviously, is to have them go in conjunction and parallel so that both outcomes are comfortable to both sides of the house. And keep in mind, that's where you have a licensed fighter with a bout in Nevada. And what this policy has to address and does address very effectively is ensuring whether it's a self-governed, as the previous question, location and you know, overseas or in a different state that doesn't have the robust policy that the state of Nevada has, and arguably not a fair process either, by the way, that those rights are protected in the finality and uniformity of a consistent application of strong anti-doping policies can be applied to the athletes in this sport across the world.
And then just one other quick question, turnaround time. I don't remember if it was Anderson or John Jones or Cormier or whoever, but there was some that we didn't get the test results back until after the fight. Can you assure us that the test results are going, if somebody's tested prior to the fight, that the test will be done so that the result will be out for a fight?
You know, I've learned, been around this business long enough to know you don't rush science. And science needs its time. You want the science right. You don't want to make mistakes with the science. That's terribly unfair to athletes. And make no mistake, this is here for clean athletes. We've heard from athletes in the UFC before we got involved. They want this in place to protect their rights. They want to do it the right way. They don't want to be cheated. And we're here to protect them. And what's equally important in strong penalties is ensuring you have appropriate checks and balances in the system so that someone who is accused publicly or through a formal legal arbitration process, that their rights are respected. And we know, and other athletes can know, if a sanction results from the process, that it's a fair sanction and it's an accurate sanction. And no one's going to be removed from the playing field because the sport doesn't like them or for any other bad reason. It's going to be solely because they broke the rules and the fair application of those rules have been adequately applied. So I don't rush the science. Obviously, we want test results, you know, within an hour of the test happening. Our literature indicates anywhere from 3 to 5 weeks it can take. You're doing EPO analysis, CIR analysis, HGH blood analysis, reviewing athlete biological passport data that comes in and has to be compiled with other tests that athlete may have. That takes time. It's a necessary evil of an effective program. What we've promised is to expedite those before fights where we can, and they've agreed to deal with them as they come in.
Everybody, thank you very much for coming, and this is going to conclude the press conference. Thanks.